League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Welcome to yet another On The Record podcast.
Indeed.
We are, of course, the two Mikes. Mike Hawkey Parry is here.
I am.
I'm Mike Graham.
Mm.
We've been doing very well with these, you know. Lots of people like them.
Well, I'm glad they do, you know, because I feel that we're reaching out to the audience with these.
Yeah,
and, and it's the most direct way to talk to the audience. Now, talking about communication, the audience, one of the world's great original communicators was Dr. Johnson, okay?
He was Samuel Johnson.
Samuel Johnson.
Yes.
Man of letters, 18th century man of letters.
Yeah.
But I've been reading a new book that's come out about him. Somebody sent me the book, okay?
Oh, yeah.
And it's called The World in 38 Chapters or Dr. Johnson's Guide to Life. And I have to say, I just don't get him.
38 chapters?
Yeah, 38 chapters.
Are those his chapters or are these chapters in the new
book? Well, there aren't 38 chapters in the book.
Yeah.
The book is called The World in 38 Chapters or Dr. Johnson's Guide to Life.
Okay.
Because he wrote 38 chapters of The Guide to Life and it's all been crushed down into this book, really.
I see. Right.
And it's a biography of him, but I just don't get him. I'm not sure what he was good at, what he was famous for. Now, the reason why he has touched the lives of you and me is that if you remember, we were recently in the Cheshire Cheese, a very famous Fleet Street pub, and just up the alleyway there.
Yeah.
In
Samuel Johnson's house.
House is there, that's right.
Right.
But he couldn't afford the house anyway. He was broke and he was a bit of an itinerant. He had a mistress who regularly chained him up and beat him because that's what he liked. Yeah.
Well, he wanted to be chained up.
Yeah.
Well, it says, in anything I've ever read about him,
Always
said he was a bit of a moralist. He was a high Tory. He was quite sort of right wing about stuff, right?
Mm.
And he would have been somebody who would have rather been, I would have said, dismissive of somebody with low moral fibre, i.e., somebody who liked being chained up and whipped to within an inch of his life.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, you know, all these men of letters and politicians and all that, they've all got secret lives.
Well, most of them have.
But what I don't understand is that he's famous for some incredibly prescient and original sayings.
Yeah, like what?
Well, this is exactly it. I don't find them that good. He says one of his great sayings is the one about the last refuge of a scoundrel.
Oh yeah.
The last refuge of a scoundrel is to be a politician.
Uh-huh.
His famous his saying.
Isn't he the one who also said when you're tired of London, you're tired of life? Didn't he say that as well?
Yeah. But another one he said was, whoever thinks of going to bed before 12 o'clock is a scoundrel.
Oh, yeah.
Why is that, like, philosophical? Why is that clever?
I think you have to think about the times when he was saying these things. So when it was his early part of the 18th century, there weren't that many philosophers around. There weren't that many people who were giving their pronunciation on the way of the world.
Yeah.
You know, and so therefore, if you said anything at all and you were able to write it down and get it published, then you were clearly a man of letters.
Yeah, well,
I think that's what it was all about. I mean, if it was you back then at the early stages, you'd have been meeting coffee houses. Newspapers were kind of at the beginning of their, you know, their kind of introduction to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these great thinkers would get together. And obviously he was one of those who was a lot better off than everybody else.
Well, you say that, but I think he was a fat dickhead.
I'm not sure that's really
reading the book. I mean,
criticism.
For instance.
Well, we're not a fucking South Bank show, are we?
Well, yeah.
We're sitting here going, Hawkey thinks Dr. Johnson was a fat dickhead.
Yes, that's right, I do.
That's the best you can offer.
Well, that is the best I can offer because this saying about when a man is tired of London, he's tired of life.
Well, I think that's a good saying.
No, London was a cesspit in those days,
but it
right?
was a very active cesspit.
No, In the 18th century, you couldn't walk along streets in London because there was raw sewage floating down the street.
That was the same in every other part of the world.
I don't give a monkeys. It wouldn't got me in London. I'd have gone and lived in a village somewhere.
It wasn't any different in Chester, by the way.
Well,
Chester had running sewage going through it as well.
No, it didn't, because Chester was a Roman city and they'd already built the sewers, the Romans, even though it was 1,400 years earlier.
Londinium is not a Roman city.
Well, it kind of was, but it had expanded beyond the city of London, you see what I mean?
I see.
Like, for instance, right, his wife, so he had a wife and a mistress.
Johnson's wife, Mrs. Johnson.
Yeah, Mrs. Johnson, I mean, the mistress was the one who chained him up and beat his buttocks because he liked that, apparently.
Okay, how do you know about all that, anyway?
It's in the book.
Oh, okay.
It's in the book I've read.
Is that one of the 38 chapters?
It's one of the 38 chapters, But
like 38 Shades of Grey.
Yeah, he was basically a drunk. Yeah. I mean, for instance...
used to write for something called the Birmingham Journal. Started off kind of where you did, 1732.
That's right. Unsurprisingly, he was not a healthy specimen. Johnson was asthmatic, bronchial, suffered from gout, rheumatic disorder, dropsical, which apparently is dropsy you know, where you shake.
Well, also, he's deaf in one ear and blind in one eye.
He was deaf in one ear and blind in one eye. And how he ever became a philosopher and people liked him, I've no idea.
Well, I've just told you why. Because he was a guy who was a thinker, and in those days, thinking was not something that people did.
Yeah.
Most people were like you. You just dismissed intellectuals because you don't like the look of them.
Yeah.
You're frightened they might be more intelligent than you,
so
you don't want to pay them any attention.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah. Johnson said that when a man is tired of London, he's tired of life, hardly salubrious. The streets were a glutinous mixture of animal manure, dead cats and dogs, ashes, straw and human waste.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, who in their right mind would want to walk down a street like that, OK?
Well, because in London, you know, if you wanted to be at the centre of things, that was what you had to
do. Now, his wife, whose name was Tetty, said, I'm not living in this filthy cesspit.
Tetty?
Tetty.
What's that short for?
Well, I don't know. T-E-T-T-Y, I suppose. Tetty. Annette. Annette, maybe?
Maybe, yeah.
Or something like that, yeah. And so, guess what?
Mm.
She repaired to a distant village.
Oh, did she?
Guess that was called.
What was that called?
Hampstead.
Hampstead?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, in North London.
Yeah, exactly, because it was a village in those days, okay?
Yeah, well, Hampstead Village is still known as Hampstead Village.
Yeah, of course it is,
And the thing about Hampstead Village, right, and my father told me this many years ago, is that it's up on a hill, right, and it's in northwest London.
That's right.
Because don't forget, one of the reasons that the east part of most cities in the west, if you know what I mean, is the poor part, because all the rubbish drifts that way.
Yes.
Because the westerly wind that comes in from the west tends to blow all the rubbish east.
Well, that's
so the reason why East London became a sort of shithole was because it was down near the river.
That's right.
And it had all the rubbish blown towards it.
It was, in fact, you're absolutely along the right lines, but also they built the factories so that all the smoke blew to the east.
Yeah. Well, it blew to the east naturally.
That's right.
That's the way the wind was blowing.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. Mm. So if you lived in the East End, you were covered in soot and smog
all
the time.
That's why the people in Hampstead were considered to be, you know, much better off.
Oh, of course they were.
And much healthier.
Of course they were.
It was high on the hill, which it still is, of course.
Yeah.
And it was very, very beautiful.
I was reading a piece by one of the rather better, you know, guys who review restaurants this week. Not Jay Rayner. No, not Jay Rayner. No.
The man who should not be named.
The man who should not be named. This guy is quite famous. He's got a father who's got a famous name in journalism as well.
Oh, yeah.
And he lives in Hampstead.
Not Corran.
Charles Corran, absolutely.
His
well done. Yeah,
there's a punch.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and in fact, he.
I like Charles Corran. He's quite funny.
Charles Corran's quite funny. I agree. And in fact, he lives in one part of Hampstead and has an office now in another.
Oh, right.
Because he worked from home, and I know what he means. Working from home is difficult. I never liked working from home.
I worked from home in New York for a while, and
well,
it was tough.
Funny enough, in both in New York and Washington, I at times had to work from home when we were swapping offices and all that. And
it's hard for you to work at home in Washington because you had all those packages arriving all the time, constantly, that you kept buying late-night TV
garden
shopping
shears
channel.
Garden
sheds.
Yeah,
you got a lawnmower, I think.
A lawnmower I did buy, even though that you know there was no lawn. But in fact, on a 32nd floor apartment, you can't have a lawn.
No.
Or even a hedge.
No.
But anyway, there we go. But anyway, the point of my story is, Giles Corran said that in his walk from one part of Hampstead to the other, you'll probably know this, he suddenly comes around a bend through a clump of trees and he can see the whole of London in front of him down the hill.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, that is, I tell you exactly where that is.
Yeah.
That is East Heath Road.
Right.
Right close to where Boy George has got a house.
Oh, okay,
Boy
yeah.
George lived there sort of when Hampstead was still relatively affordable. You know, George Michael bought a house there. Boy George bought a house there.
Yes.
Keith Richard actually used to have a place there.
Yes.
And there's a scene in, I think it's The American Werewolf in London, if you remember that
movie
in the 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
Where a guy's walking
great movie,
around, because there's one particular particular block of flats, which is very... Do you know those kind of Edwardian mansions that you yes. see in parts of London?
Yes, I do.
Red brick, but they've yeah. got sort of white bits on them.
Yes, I
and
do,
the big
yeah.
numbers are always in black.
Yeah.
There's a big building right in the middle of the heath.
Yeah.
Right on the edge of East Heath Road.
Right.
And there's the guy walks around it before he gets attacked by the werewolf.
Yeah.
But as you walk down there... You see the whole of London.
Right,
and
okay.
it's a beautiful scene. It really is. Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, anyway, just to get back to Samuel Johnson, this yes. is what I'm going to say of him.
Mm.
The guy was a complete twat because...
You're really giving this guy a going over, aren't
right,
you?
Well, his wife Tetty died in 1752.
Okay.
Johnson was pissed in a pub at the time, right, in Fleet Street, so didn't bother
well,
attending her funeral.
I mean, you should really give right? this guy a lot of credit because he clearly yeah. managed to make yeah. a name for himself yeah. while being bladderated most of the time.
Yeah, that's right. He walked around with a pot of... port in his hand all
he
the time.
Have, I presumably he would have drunk in the Cheshire Cheese as well, right?
Yeah, of course he did. That
because,
was his local boozer.
That was open then,
yeah,
wasn't it?
That was his local boozer. It's yeah. been open since 1600, right. the Cheshire Cheese.
Okay.
So so when Tetty died in 1752, Johnson didn't even attend her funeral. He didn't visit her grave for more than a year, and it would be another 30 years, because right. he lived till a ripe old age, despite right. all his illnesses, before he commissioned a memorial stone laid there right. to signify her... her grave.
Okay. Well, hang on. Clearly, despite the fact yeah. that you've described Samuel Johnson, Dr. Johnson, yeah. one of the great literary yeah. figures yeah. of our history,
yeah.
as similarly a twat and a dickhead,
yes.
right? There are three yeah. statues to him in existence,
well,
right?
God
one
knows why.
Is in Uttoxeter. I'm not yeah. quite sure why.
Yeah.
One is in London, of course, where he lived. The other yeah. is in Lichfield, where he was born.
Yes.
Because he was born in Lichfield,
yeah.
which is up towards Birmingham.
Yeah, he was born in Lichfield, and he walked all the way to London the first time.
And he's described he got there. By the people I'm reading about yeah. him yeah. as not only a well-known writer and scholar, but also he was a kind of celebrity of his time.
Yeah, he was.
So therefore... Well, sort of completely ripping apart his character,
yeah.
I think is a mistake.
No, it's not a mistake. He produced, what he's famous for, producing the first English dictionary. But it took him about 20 years.
Yeah.
And
do you remember the episode of, was it Blackadder?
Blackadder.
Where the guy was, somebody played Samuel Johnson in it.
Yeah.
You remember? And they threw his dictionary on the fire by mistake.
Oh,
remember
did
that?
They? No, I don't
it's
remember
very
that,
funny
because no.
he produced yeah. this dictionary, right, and he's
yes.
he's depicted actually in Blackadder as a bit of a wanker.
Yeah, well,
right? And he
yeah,
arrives,
well, that's the impression
and
I'm
he's
getting.
Like, oh, and you yeah. know, Blackadder's kind of like, oh, look, Dr. Johnson's arrived. You've got your dictionary, Dr. Johnson.
Yeah.
And he goes through it. And he goes, oh, I see you don't have the word sausage in it.
Yes.
And he goes, oh, Christ. And it's become a massive. It's a very funny sketch. You should try and see it. It's the Blackadder. I can't remember exactly which one it is. It's the Regency one, anyway.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Well, he eventually got involved with another woman called Hester Thrale. Had some funny named women in his life, didn't he?
Certainly did.
But she was a wealthy married woman. He only wanted her money, really.
Right.
She lived in Streatham.
Streatham's not a very nice place.
No, and his children described him as a combination of a friend and a toy elephant because he was so big and fat.
Do you think there are presumably now still... descendants of Samuel Johnson that walk around.
I don't know.
I mean, they're nothing to do with Boris Johnson.
I don't know.
Rachel Johnson.
I don't know.
Well,
I really don't
well,
know.
Why don't
I mean,
you know? You
well,
said
they could
read
be.
The book.
Well, it's not in this book, no.
Yeah, okay.
And in fact, another one of his great quotes was eventually he wanted to go to Scotland, okay?
Yes.
So when he got there, his famous quote was, on the whole, Scotland was worth seeing, but not worth going to see.
All right. That's a bit harsh. One of the things that's great about Scotland is how great it looks. It's a very beautiful looking place.
I know.
I mean, there's a lot of things about Scotland you might not like.
What he meant was...
But the scenery is amazing.
What he meant was, if you ended up in Scotland for any reason,
yeah.
then it was worth seeing.
Yeah.
But if you were in London,
yeah.
it wasn't worth making a journey
going?
To go up there to go
well,
and see.
Well, I'll tell you what he's got that you haven't got, though.
Yes.
He's got a blue plaque. Now, you've often said...
Yeah.
Oh, I'd quite like a blue plaque, you know, put up in memory of me when I pass on.
Yes.
But it's not going to be the case, is it?
No, I think I will get a blue plaque.
Why would you get a blue plaque?
I haven't finished yet, and what I'm doing.
What do you mean you haven't finished?
Well, I'll be known as an arch communicator by the time I kick the bucket.
Arch communicator.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't that sound like you're sort of some kind of villain?
No.
Normally, arch is used in a negative way.
No.
I'll be an arch villain.
No, I'll be an arch communicator.
Really?
Now, the last thing I want to say about Johnson was this: he was a dirty old bastard as well.
Well, I mean, you've already explained how he liked to be chained up and whipped.
but here's what he said of one particular woman.
Mm.
He said he's described as a larger than life aphorist. Right?
Aphorist.
You know
is
an aphorist?
No,
I don't know. I don't know.
I've
aphorist
never heard
is.
Of that. What? AFF.
No, aphorist.
Oh, aphorist.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'm going to look that up in my dictionary.
Okay.
The one written by Samuel Johnson.
Well, it must be in there.
Yeah. always ready with an apt and well-phrased quote and opinion. For example, upon entering something like the Windmill Theatre in those days, you know what I mean?
Oh, here you go. Aphorism is a pithy observation which contains a general truth.
Oh, I see, right.
I'd say I'm a bit of an aphorist, then.
Yeah, maybe.
What do you say?
Yeah, could be.
You don't want to give me any credit.
No. He says upon entering the Windmill Theatre, but it wasn't the Windmill Theatre, it was some, you know, House of Ill Repute.
Oh, yeah.
He said...
What, do you mean Paul Raymond's Windmill Theatre?
Yeah, something
in
like
Windmill
that.
Street?
Yeah, that's
you
the
mean
one, yeah.
The Raymond Review Bar?
Yeah, that's the one,
is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, but it wasn't there in those days. It was something...
Well, yeah, but it's obviously always been a bit of a dodgy area.
Yeah, absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
Women of ill repute.
Anyway, he said, actresses... This is a famous quote from The Man of Letters, right?
Right.
He said, actresses in silk stockings do make my genitalia quiver.
Well, what a great man. Well, I mean, it's not exactly fucking Shakespeare, is it?
Why
is he writing about his genitalia?
Well,
what's wrong
know.
With him?
He apparently died of
testicular cancer.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, there's a bit too much of the coin quivering genitalia going on.
But anyway, later on, to tidy up his reputation, they changed that quote to... actresses in silk stockings do excite my amorous propensities.
Oh, yes. Well, that's a little bit better.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all very well to be a man of letters, but if you can't actually disguise your crudity, then I think you are not as great of a man of letters as we would have thought.
Exactly.
But that's enough about Samuel Johnson.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Now, have you seen this other story that I
want
to talk to you about?
What's about
moths, right? You know how I've had problems with moths in the past? Because I told you before how at the beginning of sort of the winter, I decided, well, now it's time for me to get my cashmere jumpers out of, the wardrobe and start wearing them again because it's going to be cold, right?
Good idea.
And not only was the newest one that I got full of holes, but every single cashmere jumper, because I've told you my sister has bought me a cashmere jumper for Christmas for as many years as I can remember.
Right.
Except for when she claimed that she was having a fallow time. She couldn't afford it. Because they're about two or $300 a piece.
Oh, yeah, they're quite expensive.
And so I've got about seven or eight of these things.
Right.
In various states of disrepair.
Yes.
But they were all still, you know, without holes in them.
Yes.
I took them all out of the wardrobe and they were all full of holes.
Right.
And the bloody moths.
How long ago was this?
This was just beginning to go into the winter last year.
Really? Yeah.
About sort of September, October. You know,
well, that's not much good. You can't wear jumper with a hole in
it. So I've now given up buying cashmere because the moths that I've got in my house clearly only want to eat cashmere.
Dear me.
Because all my other jumpers I've now bought, and I've just bought cotton ones, right?
Yeah.
And they don't seem to bother with the cotton. They leave the cotton alone.
Yes.
But if I put cashmere in there, they eat the cashmere. Well, they don't eat my woolen jackets.
Okay.
They don't eat my shirts, which are made of cotton.
Right.
They don't eat my jumpers made of cotton. They're only cashmere moths.
Yeah.
But apparently, according to a report that I saw this week, moths are thriving because people are using a Nico trend of washing their clothes at a lower temperature.
Why
do
you want to do that?
Because it's better for the environment. It's better for an eco trend means you don't any longer use single use plastic.
So you
don't use a straw. You know, you don't use your polystyrene box to take your kebab home in.
You ask
for it to be done in a piece of paper, all that. And it means if you wash your clothes at 30 degrees, which is technically a cool wash, then you get more moths.
Yeah.
Isn't that ridiculous?
It's absolutely ridiculous.
I mean, you have no idea probably what temperature you wash your clothes in, do you?
Well, I don't wash them. My housekeeper does.
Well, you should tell her to make sure, I don't know if you've got a moth problem in your house.
No,
but you should tell her to make sure you wash them as high as possible.
I've got a beautiful cashmere scarf given to me by my sister a couple of Christmases ago.
You don't even wash that, do you?
Well, I've not washed it yet because I've only worn it about four or five times. Yeah. I only wear it on special occasions.
Uh-huh.
And I keep it in a sealed bag. You see what I mean?
Well, according to Rentokil, who did this study,
Yeah, yeah.
The temperature that you need to wash your stuff in in order to kill moth larvae.
Yes.
You know what moth larvae
are? No.
55 degrees centigrade.
55 degrees centigrade.
Which is pretty hot.
Well, that's pretty hot.
You look at your washing machine, you put it on 55, and you won't have any moths.
In my view, that could shrink clothes, you see.
Well, there is a problem.
If you wash the wrong sort of stuff in hot water.
I had a girlfriend once who washed, I had a very nice linen suit.
Yes.
And for some reason or other, I'd left it at her place.
Yes.
And she decided to wash it for me.
Right.
And I went back next time to see her.
Couldn't put it on.
She took it out, and it was about the size of sort of infant's clothes.
She
fucking shrunk the whole thing.
Yeah, but I mean, she should have known that you don't wash suits by and large.
I know. You
put them in a dry cleaner.
Yeah, I know.
Pretty stupid thing to
do. She wasn't very bright.
Talking about stupid things, do you know, you won't believe this, but the police have reopened the investigation into finding the killer of Goldfinger.
Do you know, I saw something about this the other day.
No, I mean, this...
And mate, you know what I love about this story?
Yeah.
The pictures that you see.
Oh, yeah.
Of the old gangsters and the gangsters'
That's
moles
right.
and all that,
That's
right?
That's right, yeah.
Because this is going back quite a few years, isn't it?
It's 3 years. 3 years since they got him, right.
Yeah, but his kind of time was even longer ago
than
that,
he's back to Brinks Matt in 83.
I'm sure he's... Is he not the guy that I nearly went to Rio to apprehend?
Which
would have been back in the sort of late 80s, early 90s.
Well,
Brinks Matt was around then, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, his name's John Palmer, right?
That's him, yeah. I'm sure that's him.
Yeah, that's right. And the police have been criticised for not finding the man who killed him.
Right.
But if you remember, the investigation started with him being diagnosed as having died of a heart attack in his back garden.
Even though he was full of bullets.
He'd been shot six times.
Yeah.
Now,
well, no wonder he died of a fucking heart attack.
Yeah, I know. But listen, I mean, the police have only just released a picture which shows you a spy hole in the fence his garden of his, quote, cottage.
Yes.
Like a £3 million cottage, right?
Right.
And this hitman...
I mean, is there any suggestion the police are up to no good here?
Well, who knows? Yeah. Because, I mean, he was wanted by the police for an awful long time.
Yeah.
He served time in Spain for timeshare fraud and all that. But he comes back to this country... Now, this hitman, he must have been quite good at his job, because, by the way...
You reckon he fired all the bullets through this one hole, then?
No, he didn't. What he did is he drilled this hole in the fence and used it as a spy hole.
Oh, OK.
So he saw the movements of John Palmer in his garden.
Oh, OK.
And when Palmer went into the house, but he knew he was coming back out because he'd left his shirt out and he had a spade dug in the ground and all that kind of stuff...
Right. Well, is he digging up his own grave?
No, I don't know. He's digging up some plants, apparently, you know. The hitman just got over the fence, hid behind a bush, and when Palmer came out again, he shot him four times, and Palmer, we believe, fell to the ground.
Yeah.
And then, according to the pathologist, because it was a different angle of the bullets, the hitman then stood over him and shot him twice again
to
make sure he was properly dead.
He was obviously a proper hitman.
Yeah, and this bloke has never been found, right?
Yeah.
And yet... The police, for some unknown reason, are putting out repeated calls to find the killer and have offered, believe it or not, a reward of £100,000.
Very strange story, that, isn't it? Because I do remember at the time...
I remember
you and I talking about it at the time, about how could the police have possibly missed the fact that this guy's riddled with bullets.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite unbelievable.
I'm pretty sure that this is the same guy, because I got a call, I remember from the News of the World, it would have been around about...
Yeah.
I guess around about early 90s when the Brinks Matt thing had happened, they'd stolen something like 26 billion, 26
yes.
million, I think it was,
yes.
in bullion, gold bullion, wasn't it?
Mm.
And he had gone off to Rio because
yes.
he tried to follow in the footsteps of old Ronnie Biggs.
Yes.
And he thought, this will be fine, I'll go off to Rio. And I got a phone call from the News of the World news desk saying, we need you to get down to Rio. And it was a great day for me because I'd never been to South America, right?
Yeah.
And I'd been working in New York for many years.
Yes.
I thought, well, I really want to get down there.
Yeah.
And you know what? I got to Miami. And I had to call the office from Miami Airport.
Yeah.
You remember doing all this kind
yeah,
of
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, sure, yeah.
The old, AT&T phone and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And they said, listen, stay where you are because we're hearing that the Scotland Yard have picked him up in Rio.
Right.
And they're taking him out of Rio to Panama, funny enough.
Yeah.
You know, in this very funny time when we were talking about Panama because of the World Cup.
Exactly,
And I said, well, what do you want me to do? And they said, and I said, you sure you don't want me to go to Panama?
Mm-hmm.
And they went, well, stay. That was when I went to stay in the old Fontainebleau Hotel.
Oh, yeah, right.
In Miami Beach.
Yeah, Miami Beach. I stayed there as well.
Yeah. And
the Doral's the other one next door.
That's right. And I was stuck there for about 2 days.
Yeah.
They kept him in Panama for one day. And then they said to me, just stay in Miami.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to go somewhere else, you know, but I couldn't go.
No.
And eventually they brought him back to Miami and put him in prison there for a while.
Right.
And I obviously tried to get in to see him, and I couldn't.
That's right,
You know, tried to offer him loads of money,
sure.
couldn't do it. And eventually it was a fucking busted flush. I had to just fly back to New York.
Just flew over to New York. And, of course, he was part of the same gang as Kenny Noy.
That's right.
Kenneth Noy.
Yeah. Who had the road rage incident.
Road rage killing, yeah. And he fled to Spain. He was brought back. He served, I think, about 14 or 15 years for that. Yeah. And he's on the brink now of being released. So
when Kenny Noy disappeared after that M25 murder...
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Everyone thought he'd gone to Northern Cyprus, didn't they? Like Azil Nadir.
Yeah.
Remember Azil Nadir, the polypet
man?
Yeah,
I do. But he went to Mallorca, didn't he?
I think he did.
It was Mallorca.
I think no, because, I mean, we had one of those situations where there was always one journo, and you'll know who it was, who it is, I'm not going to mention his by name, who would always come sort of sidling up to the desk and go, I've had a tip.
Yeah, I know where Kenny Noy is.
These were guys who would spend their entire lives being sent around the world looking for Lord fucking Luke.
That's right, yeah.
Whatever. This guy said,
Sugar.
I've had a tip. Kenny Noy's in Northern Cyprus.
That's right, yeah.
And if you were a sort of inexperienced news hand, that's a great
story.
You've got to get out there. Of course, he would go out there, spend about 3 weeks, live off his expenses, make a load of money, and then come back and say, oh,
he's not there.
He's not there, mate.
That's right, yeah. Or he fled.
You know, he's gone. In fact, some of them were so good, they'd go, I think he's in South Africa.
That's right, yeah.
And you flee over there.
Well, there was a guy called Garth Gibbs, right? And Garth Gibbs was South African. And
he was at the Mirror, wasn't he?
He was at the Mirror. Garth was at the Mirror. And I did quite a few jobs with him. But one of them was in the Lebanon, I think, right? And he wanted a few more days. He'd met a woman in the Lebanon. And, no, seriously. And Lebanese women are very beautiful.
They
you know.
Certainly are.
Yeah. And he taught me this trick on reverse psychology with the news desk, you know? So he rings up the news desk, right? And he's giving it all. Can you hear me? You know, and he can hear them perfectly. But can you hear me? You know, Garth saying, can you hear me? Can you hear me? You know, and Garth was explaining he'd need another 3 days to wrap up this story, you know. And then the bloke at the other end on the news desk is saying things like, Garth, I don't know why you need another 3 days there. Yeah. You know, what? And then Garth goes... Like there's somebody standing next to him in this phone booth, you know, and he says, these fuckers on the Mirror back in London don't believe, you know, that I'm being threatened by gangsters round here and I've got to stay another 3 days and sort it all out.
Right.
And he said that whilst he was saying he couldn't hear anything and they can't hear me.
Right.
And then, of course, as soon as he put the phone back to his ear, they say, oh, Garth, if your life's in danger, you'll have to stay and sort it out. Yeah. Of course you can have to. Have a week. Yeah. Have a week to sort it out. We don't... Because he said some load of nonsense about these guys are going to follow me back to London, you know, if I don't straighten this out. And,
I mean, the
amount
of money that they used to spend on these kinds of trips.
Yeah.
Just profligate. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Amazing. Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely ridiculous.
We had a similar one with the guy for a while. Do you know the guy that went missing from the Manic Street Preachers?
Yes.
He was another one who was seen.
Did he jump off Clifton Bridge?
Well, no, nobody really knows what happened to him, but only this year.
That was a terrible tragedy.
Only this year, right? Mm. The family came out and said, well, we've been looking in the wrong place for so long because they thought that, in fact, he had been spotted going across the Severn Bridge at 2 a.m.
That's right, walking. Yeah.
And it now turns out it's actually 2 p.m. So they got it out by 12 hours.
Right, yeah.
Nobody
knows
where he is.
That,
But there was a guy that I knew who was based in Wales who said, I've got something I can tell you about the disappearance.
Mm.
And he never gave the guy's name. He just said, the disappearance.
Yeah.
And we think he's in Goa.
Mm.
And this guy tried to get me to send him to fucking Goa, you know, off the coast of India.
This is a Welsh reporter.
Yeah, well, he was a Welsh reporter, but he claimed that he had a special insider knowledge of the Manic Street Preachers.
Well, you were Welsh, of course.
We were Welsh, from Cardiff. If I used to drink with the lead singer in one of the pubs there, not because I was particularly mates with him, but he was always in there.
Yeah,
he'd
really
walk into the pub and there he would be.
Yeah.
You know, James Dean Bradfield is his name.
Absolutely.
Anyway, but we never sent him to Goa.
No.
And of course, the bloke was never in Goa.
No.
And nobody's ever found him.
No, exactly. No, he's never been
found. Absolute racket.
Somebody told me he jumped off the Clifton Suspension Bridge and he sunk in the mud because apparently there's a lot of mud at the bottom of the Clifton Suspension Bridge.
They would have looked there for him, surely,
wouldn't they? Well, it's like quicksand. If you go down in it, where do you look? You know what I mean? All that kind of stuff.
Especially if you go in from a great height.
If you're going from a great height. And also, when you've seen the water go out of an estuary, like the estuary to the River Mersey below the Runcorn and Widnes Bridge, you're talking about, like, square miles. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Could be anywhere. And the sand shift underneath the you know, the liquid sort of sand and mud and all that kind of stuff. So it could have been anywhere.
Yeah.
Look, I want to tell you about one of my favourite people in the world is no longer with us.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not a person, but it's a gorilla called Coco.
Coco the gorilla. Yes,
Coco
I remember
the gorilla.
Coco
he's
the gorilla.
Gone.
Where was he held? Or
he was in California.
Right.
And he was a Western Lowland gorilla.
Uh-huh.
He knew thousands of words, this gorilla. He's the most intelligent animal on Earth.
There was lots of videos of him, wasn't there?
Lots of videos of him. He could recognise human words and make hand gestures to indicate that he understood what you're saying.
Oh, yeah.
It was a she, actually, not a he.
She,
Coco was a female gorilla. Mm. She learned 1,000 words of sign language, but she died of grief.
Oh, dear.
Because all her life she'd indicated she wanted a baby, and they tried to mate her many, many times.
Right.
It never worked out, okay?
Wasn't that sad?
Very sad.
Did she die before her time, as it were? Or did
no,
she
died about her time, but because she was kept in such, like, cosseted and protected circumstances, she should have died a lot. She should have lived a lot longer. Okay,
right.
But she knew 1,000 words of American Sign Language. That's called ASL. That's right. What deaf people use.
Yes,
and appeared to respond to thousands more that she had spoken.
Mm.
Once listening to one of her carers, Dr. Patterson, and another zoologist debating whether to label Coco a juvenile or an adolescent, she interrupted in sign language to say in sign language, "No, me, gorilla."
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
"No, me, gorilla."
Yeah.
Right? That was 40 years ago, so she was quite old.
Uh-huh.
And that's the time she first became a sort of international celebrity, okay?
Yeah.
But she was befriended by people as famous as Leonardo DiCaprio. Robin Williams.
DiCaprio,
though,
is
it? It is
DiCaprio.
Robin Williams, and the way science perceives communication and emotion with the great apes, she was the forebearer there. I mean, it was incredible.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
And, I mean, it's surprising that they haven't been able to replicate that, though, isn't it? Because surely if they could do that with one gorilla, could they not do it with another
gorilla? Well, they can't find any gorillas as intelligent.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. Dr. Patterson, who was with her for 40 years, was a 25-year-old psychology PhD student at Stanford.
Right.
We all know Stanford.
Stanford, very much so, yeah.
Absolutely.
Very good school, as they say in America.
Yeah, that's right. To discover whether apes could learn to communicate in sign language.
Yeah.
Now, her tutor, that was Dr. Patterson, sceptical and set the bar for success very low.
Yeah.
Her original mission was to teach a gorilla, and it didn't matter who the gorilla was, three words. And those three hand sign words by sign language were eat, drink, and the word more, M-O-R-E, within 4 years. And they taught Coco that within, like, 4 months.
Right.
And from
so
then
could
on...
could she just order her own food, then?
Yes, she could.
Mm.
She could. They used to take her to supermarkets, right?
What?
They used to take her to supermarkets.
No.
Yes, they did, yeah.
Well, how did they do that?
In the 70s, California people saw nothing odd about a student keeping a young gorilla on campus or even driving the young gorilla to the supermarket with Coco in the passenger seat of her Datsun.
That's ridiculous.
Of her Datsun.
But that's dangerous.
Right?
You can't be fucking taking gorillas out into the open air.
And then you take the gorilla into the supermarket and Coco would indicate the food she wanted. So,
how
like,
could they let a gorilla in a supermarket? You can't take a dog in a supermarket.
No, well...
Are you sure that's true?
No, I'm sure it's true, yeah, because it was only she only a little gorilla then, like, wasn't fully grown
still,
gorilla, you know?
Yeah, but I've only got a dog, but you can't walk into a supermarket with a dog. Can you imagine trying to walk into a supermarket here with a gorilla?
Yeah, well, yeah, but, I mean, this was California where everybody's effing mad, you know what I mean?
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, they're all
have you
all
seen
mad.
Planet of the Apes?
No, I haven't, actually.
Have you not seen any of the movies?
Yes, I have, yeah.
You should see the movies.
I've seen
really
one
good.
Of them. Yeah, they are. Yeah, they're
really
very
good.
Realistic, aren't
but
they?
But do you know where, at the beginning of the movie, and where the ape starts to go mad?
Yes.
Because they take him to the park.
Right.
And they have him on a lead.
Right.
Do you remember? And as he gets older, and as he gets older,
yes.
he sees the fact that he shouldn't be on a lead.
Yes.
And as they're walking out of the park one day,
yes.
he sees another guy with a dog.
Right.
And he looks to his owner and basically says, so you think I'm your pet, basically.
Yeah.
Because he started talking by this point.
Right.
Because there's that first chilling moment where the ape suddenly says a word.
Yeah.
He looks at his owner and just goes, no.
Mm.
And it's really weird.
Yeah.
You know, because up until that moment, he hasn't spoken. He
hasn't spoken, no.
I can't... I mean, I'm sorry, if I saw somebody walking around with a gorilla...
Yeah.
I think I'd call the police.
Well, I'm sure you would, but they must have got used to it in California. Dr. Patterson's claims were constantly being knocked down by other scientists. And do you know what... It was called humanity envy.
Right.
There were a lot of scientists around in the world who did not want to believe that a gorilla could be that close to being as intelligent as any form of human being, even a two-year-old or three-year-old child.
He wasn't driving the Datsun, though, was he?
No, he wasn't driving the Datsun, no.
That's what I mean. No,
wasn't
that clever?
No, no, absolutely. Mm. But Coco used to issue signs through sign language saying, be polite. People have goodness. And it was quite an amazing kind of experience. But now poor old Coco's
gone. Are they going to have like a proper funeral for Coco?
Well, I think so, yeah. I would think they would.
They should, really.
But I think the problem is, I think they'll want to take her brain out and all that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? Because I want to find out just how Coco, the gorilla, became such a... such an amazing animal.
How's Tommy the Chimp getting on these days?
Tommy the Chimp, we're still fighting that battle.
Still fighting it.
Still fighting the battle to get him free from his concrete cage.
Yeah, he's just still in it, though.
Oh, he's still in it. Yeah. Just to finish off here, Coco never had children. They couldn't make Coco with anybody else.
Well, you said that she died of grief as a result, right?
Died of grief, but for the last sort of 20 years, she'd adopted a kitten.
Oh, yeah.
A grey Manx kitten.
Mm. From the Isle of Man.
From the Isle of Man. Which was a substitute baby for her, and would hardly ever let her go. Cradled and nuzzled it constantly, tickling its fur and grooming it. The kitten was less pleased with this obsessive attention, and as cats will, began to bite and scratch to gain little independence.
Oh dear.
Coco would tell it off, calling it bad cat in sign language, okay?
The trouble is, the cat didn't know the sign language.
No.
The cat couldn't do anything.
No, that's right.
The cat didn't know she was a bad cat.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. But Coco soon learned the word visits and would ask the minders, because the cat had to be taken away, you know, I want my kitten to visit me.
Yeah. Is that the sort of accent that you think they would read?
Well,
I'm very touching that you've formed such a bond with the primates.
That's right, yeah.
But unfortunately, we're now out of time.
We are, I'm afraid.
So we'll have to come back to that another time. This is on the record.
It certainly is.
We are the two mics.
We are.
And of course, there'll be more coming soon. If it was you back then at the early stages, you'd have been meeting coffee houses. Newspapers were kind of at the beginning of their, you know, their kind of introduction to the world. And all of these great thinkers would get together. And obviously he was one of those who was a lot better off than everybody else.
Well, you say that, but I think he was a fat dickhead.
I'm not sure that's really
reading the book. I mean, for instance,
we're not a fucking South Bank show, are we?
Well, yeah.
We're sitting here going, oh, so Porky thinks Dr. Johnson was a fat dickhead.
Yes, that's right. I do. That,
that's the best you can offer. According to Rentokill, this study, the temperature that you need to wash your stuff in order to kill moth larvae, you know what moth larvae
is? No,
55 degrees centigrade.
55 degrees centigrade.
Which is pretty hot.
Well,
you look at your washing machine, you put it on 55, and you won't have any moths.
In my view, that could shrink clothes, you see, if you wash the wrong sort of stuff in hot water. So
I had a girlfriend once who washed, I had a very nice linen suit.
Yes.
And for some reason or other, I'd left it at her place.
Yes.
And she decided to wash it for me.
Right.
And I went back the next time to see her.
Couldn't put it on.
She took it out, and it was about the size of sort of infant's
clothes.
She fucking shrunk the whole thing.
Yeah, but I mean, she should have known that you don't wash suits up by and large.
I know.
You put them in a dry cleaner.
Yeah, I know.
Pretty stupid thing to do.
She wasn't very bright. Sorry, if I saw somebody walking around with a gorilla, I think I'd call the police.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.